So we are here celebrating once again 20 years of 24. This November marks the 20-year anniversary of the show we watch and don't sleep very often because we keep watching. We have today as our guest, special guest today, Mr. Carlos Bernard, who has been on 24 and come back to 24 and come back to Legacy and been a part of the 24 universe. And we are honored and pleased to have him as part of our discussion today.
My pleasure. Good to be here, guys.
Absolutely. What's on your plate these days?
I just got back from, I was in New York for 3 months directing FBI and then Most Wanted, and just got back home to LA. And honestly, on my plate right now is chasing after my son, doing a little swimming and golf, and that's it.
Nice.
That's what I'm up to right now.
Sounds like a great agenda.
Absolutely, absolutely. What about being an actor has assisted you in your directing?
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, you know, especially with television, I know what that schedule is like. I know what the demands are. I just know what a good set feels like and what a bad set feels like. You
right,
know?
Yeah.
The thing that probably helps me the most is that I know a good take when I see it, so I don't make my actors do more than they need to. I also know when I'm not going to get a good take, honestly.
And not belabor it until you get it?
I just know, basically this is what we're going to get.
Probably more essential than the latter.
It's more essential than a ladder. It really is. It's a lot of time on both ends. And it saves a lot of energy for the actors as well, because it can be really taxing, especially if a director is making you do take after take and they have no idea what they're looking for. They just keep making you do it because they either aren't able to see it or they don't know exactly what they want. And
right.
So they're insecure and they just keep making you do takes without really being specific about what they want you to do, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
You know, and just obviously just I am an actor. So when it comes to talking to actors, it's just what we do. You know what I mean? I find a lot of directors are afraid to talk to actors because they don't know. They're just nervous about it because they don't feel like they know how to talk to an actor. You know,
and right.
They get scared, you know, and I think those are probably the main things.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I've been watching FBI since it started, and those two characters, the main characters of Maggie and OA, I think they could fit somewhere in the 24 universe. There's a resolute.
They could.
Yeah, certainly Maggie, her backstory, and OA's as well. I think either of them, you know, when it comes down to, I need to make the right call.
And Jubal, too, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Jubal, you know, Jeremy Sisto as well.
I think yes. Right. What do you enjoy about directing?
I came up as an artist. My mom was a painter. I started painting at like when I was like 8 or 9. And
okay.
I went to undergrad as a graphic artist. I think it really helps me use those talents. It allows me to use those talents. I think I love editing. I love editing.
Okay.
I love the sort of beat by beat process of putting together a show and getting the flow and the rhythm. And, you know, I'm a visual person. So I think all that, I kind of feel like I'm home. When I first started directing theater.
Okay.
It was before it was after I went to graduate school, acting school. And I couldn't, I was having a hard time getting an agent even in LA. And some friends of mine started producing plays and I started directing plays. And really from the get-go, I felt really comfortable doing that. And then when I started finally after the run of 24, I started directing on camera and it just felt like home immediately. It just felt very comfortable. Almost like all these things that I had done, like, you know, my waiter job was a graphic designer while I was trying to get acting jobs. God bless, I didn't have to work in a restaurant.
Right.
I did freelance graphic design jobs, you know? And so I just felt like it was kind of like a coming together of all these different kinds of jobs I've had through the years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right,
your medium is to be creative in whatever capacity it is. You need to be creative.
And visually, it's a big part of it too, you know? And as an actor, I really, you know, I would sketch out stuff as an actor, just sort of like character and scenery and things that I felt just doodling just to get my brain moving where the script was. And so it just feels natural to me.
In the Facebook group that we have, we're the kind of group that where when you're doing something new, we post that. Or when somebody else is, we see Roger Cross on something, we'll post Roger Cross is on a new show or direct or whatever the case may
be. What show is Roger Cross on?
Roger Cross right now is on a show called Coroner up in Canada.
Coroner.
Yeah.
Oh, he's Canadian, right?
He's Canadian, yeah. Yeah.
I swear, I think 3/4 of people on 24 were Canadian.
Well, it's interesting. I was talking to Howard Gordon last night, and I said to him, I said, did you intentionally cast the three Canadians to be your All-American family?
That's right. They were. Yeah, they were all Canadian. Well, there were more Canadians on that pilot than, I mean, it was crazy.
there was a movie years ago called The Canadian Invasion. It was all about how Canada was taking over the entertainment industry.
And completely. By the way, I can't go up to Canada to work. They won't let me do that.
They won't let you in?
Oh, no. What they do is they'll do, like, productions will have, like, one person, but I can't just go up there.
We'll talk. I know people. We'll talk. We can maybe get you up to Canada. Unfortunately, they're going to pay
in Canada. I went to Canada to work. They didn't want to let me in because I had gotten arrested when I was in college. It was like 30 years ago or something like that, 25 years ago. And I forgot about it. And the woman was like, have you ever committed a felony? And I was like, no. And then she said, all right, go sit down. And I'm sitting there. I'm waiting for like 10, 15 minutes. And I get called back up to the window. And she said, it's a crime to lie to me. Okay.
Don't know what you're talking about.
She's like, I asked you if you had committed a felony. And I go, yeah, I haven't. 1983, Bloomington, Illinois. I'm like, wait a second. I felt like the guy from Stripes, you know. I felt like Bill Murray. I was like, I wasn't convicted.
That's right. Let's be very clear. Let's be very clear about that.
Convicted? No.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a lie. That's a definite lie.
Plausible deniability. That's what that
and
was.
And I wasn't. And I wasn't, by the way. I was not convicted.
Good. Yes.
By the way, college prank. You're not going to let me in.
Yeah,
because of a college prank, really?
Yeah,
you know, hey, well, come on, the cow survived, right? You know.
Hey, well, speaking of Illinois, you brought up Illinois, the Cubs. I've heard rumors and I've heard different things. Was the Cubs? I watched the episode where we showed your apartment a couple days ago, and there's the Cubs mug, and the Cubs mug is at CTU. Was the Cubs mug something that you brought in? Was it something that was part of the character? How did?
It was kind of a shout out to my buddies in Chicago.
Sure.
So I just made sure anytime I don't think I got it in Legacy because I didn't have anywhere. I had nowhere.
You didn't sit very long.
Legacy.
Yeah.
I had no home or office or anything.
Right, right.
So I couldn't get it in Legacy. But I think I got it in. I don't think I got it in season 7 either.
Yeah, not a lot of sitting down in those seasons. Probably that's why too, right? Yeah,
How did you feel about taking Tony in that more of an antagonist direction and then kind of back and forth? Well, actually, let me rephrase. How much did you know going into season 7?
Well, I mean, I knew that he was going to be the antagonist. I knew that he was, you know, whether he was going to end up being on the good side, on the wrong side, in the end, I didn't know. But really, for me, it was all about finding the killer or the character's wife. Right,
right. Yeah.
Finding Michelle's killer, which isn't, interestingly enough, was an idea that I had pitched in season 5.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were after season 4, I was driving to the airport to pick up my mom or brother or somebody, and the producers called me, you know, and it's never a good thing if the producers call you at home,
right,
and they were all on the phone. They were all on the phone, which is another bad sign.
I've heard that from others as well. Yeah, you don't want them, and you don't want all of them for sure.
no, not a good thing. And so they were calling to tell me, you know, they were like, hey, you know, it's been great working. We love you so much. And I'm like, here it comes. But we're going to kill you in the first episode of season 5. And I was like, really? I'm like, yeah, we're going to have, you know, you and Michelle are living together and you come out to go to work and the car blows up and you guys die. And I was like, oh, okay, well, sounds like a wasted Dory idea.
But right, right.
And they're like, what are you talking about? I was like, well, I mean, you could have me live and then I go after whoever the killer was. And they're like, ooh, we'll call you back.
Really? Really? You changed their minds. That is some Jedi mind power. That's amazing.
It's a shame that you had Howard on last night instead of tomorrow.
Because right.
Howard was the one who was like, oh, hey, that's a good idea. We're going to call you back. Anyhow, so that really came to fruition in season 7.
You guys were like, you know, in season 1, there was Jack and Terry, and that was like the kind of heart of the show. And then after season 1, obviously that couldn't be. And then you two, Tony and Michelle, became the heart of the show. Kind of a better, warmer heart, you know, because Tony's a much more human being than Jack was ever capable of really being. that was Tony's struggle all the time, was finding his humanity when the moment came.
Yeah.
Right?
He's like, yeah, I think like it was actually a flaw when it came to that particular job, probably.
Probably, but it was a definite strength for storytelling.
I mean, beginning of season 5, we're watching it, and this happens, and then Palmer goes down, and then the two of you go down, and we're like, am I, can I keep watching this show anymore?
That was one of the brilliant things of the writers, is they always... We had a cigar room. I don't know if Howard told you this. There was a cigar room on set in the studio where the writers would hang out, and those of us that smoke cigars, actors, would hang out there, and we'd like pitch ideas back and forth. And one of the amazing things of these writers was they'd always sit down and go, what can't happen? And then they try to make it happen, you know.
What's outside of the realm,
And that was a great example. It was like, well, let's just kill 4 characters in the first 2 minutes.
But I got to tell you, described the greatest performance review ever. They called you up to say you're done, and you talked them out of it. That is amazing.
That wasn't the first time. I've talked them out of other things, too. I've been writing as long as I've been acting. Always sort of have ideas for, what if we do this? Can we do this? And to their credit, I mean, one of the reasons why the show, I think, was so strong was that they were so collaborative. They were so open to ideas. If it doesn't work, they wouldn't use it.
Right.
But I would
come
in with scenes and say, you know, this belongs in this script. And sometimes they'd use it. Sometimes they wouldn't, you know, but they were always open to it.
Yeah. But I've heard that sentiment echoed over and over, that the success is due to the openness and collaboration of everybody. There weren't too many people going, I know what's best for, you know, it was okay.
Always. I mean, down to the cameraman, if the cameraman had an idea of something of a beat, because, you know, especially Guy Skinner, who was our A cameraman, who was just amazing. Just a big hulk of a guy, but he was like a ballerina. He could move around with that camera on his shoulder and stuff. But he had the eye of, I always thought, the eye of a director, you know. And sometimes he would be like, hey, what if you, you know, is it okay? What if you come over here and do this over here? You know, that's a great idea.
Sounds like great leadership.
From the top, I think it comes, you know, fish stinks from the head, right?
Yeah.
Right. We were talking about the first episode of season 5 where they kill all of, you know, half of your loved ones, right?
Yeah.
But that wasn't the first time the 24 had done that. And I say, and I believe many, probably yourself, agree, 24 kind of invented killing the main characters off.
Yeah. Like
no one was safe. I mean, Game of Thrones, people talk about Game of Thrones till they're pale white in the face, right? But really, killing off main characters started with 24, and it's become what it is today. Now people aren't really safe in shows.
I actually remember the first season. There was a character that Mike, you know, guys know, remember Michael O'Neill? He played Jack's boss in the pilot. O'Neill's great, great character actor. I mean, that guy, I'm a really good friend with Michael still. And I think it was the second or third, maybe third episode that killed him off.
I was shocked as well.
I was like, they kill that guy off? All bets are off because he's fantastic and they're killing him off. After that, I never really bought anything on credit, you know what I'm saying?
Right, yeah. All bets are off at that point.
All bets are off.
Yeah, absolutely.
When did you stop that not putting anything on credit? Because I imagine season 2, 3 started happening. You know, there was a point where it was a gig, and then there was a point when you knew, okay, this thing's pretty huge.
I mean, I negotiated contracts year to year because you never knew what was going to happen.
Right.
I don't know. Before we start shooting in July, I'm thinking I should probably start looking for a job because I don't know.
Keep your options open just in case, right?
We decided to do this stuff because, hey, we're super fans. You know what I mean? We're not the normal, you know, we're not going to go out to the very next show and be like, hi, guys, we're big fans of you. And tell us about your thing. You know, this is devoted to this. So to us to hear that, it sounds like, wow, you know, it's like a little scarier than it on this side of the screen.
Well, I mean, it works to your advantage in two ways as an actor. It's less security, but really not. They can always fire you whenever they want. There's no such thing as security.
Absolutely.
But I think the great thing is that it makes you appreciate it. It makes you treat each season as if the last one. Each episode is a possible last episode.
Sure, yeah. Yeah.
You're never taking it for granted, which we never did. I've guest starred on shows where I walk onto the set. The people are over it. They're phoning it in a little bit, and that never happened on our show. And then the other advantage is that, you know, you negotiate every year. So
as the shows, you know, certainly going from season one to season six and season seven, where it's Emmy winning and more people are talking about it, and it's a water cooler. When we had water cooler discussions, right? It was still that binge, the beginning of the binge
era. You're not locked into a contract that you signed in the first year.
Sure.
But more importantly, I think creatively, it really keeps you on your toes.
Sure. Yeah. Now, who did you prefer playing more, by the book Tony or Revenge Tony?
Well, you know, the darker characters are always more fun to watch.
Sure. Yeah.
And season seven was pretty, that was a good time. That was fun.
All your work on 24 was great, but I especially enjoyed season seven because just the friendship of those two guys turning into what it was on screen and how you and Cooper play against each other, with each other as well, but against each other. We saw it at the end of season three. Just the dynamic of you guys against each other was so intriguing that I'm so glad it came back in season seven on a much larger scale.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and you know, we always had a great time. Always had a great time together.
I'm not saying this just because you're on here, but I own the DVD set, and I still, once we got it streaming, I'm down at 2 a.m, like I did the first year, watching. I'm going, one more episode. I can watch one more episode, even though I know what's going on. But the change in that character, all I'm saying is, the more I watch it, and I'm not just saying this because you're on here, I've said it several times. The more I repeatedly watch it, I'm more fascinated with your character because there's so many different places that you take it, and leading up to Legacy, and you know, it's like there's different versions of you that are all still part of you, and you understand why you got there, how season five took you to season seven. But I'm really fascinated with the dynamic, as Aaron was saying, between Tony and Jack. That becomes really kind of the core.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic, and you know, it's an unusual thing to be able to take a character that many years in evolution. And by the way, between each year, there would be a time span between the end of one year and another year, so
right.
You would have to sort of fill in the dots there and what's happened to him since then, where is he at now? And it was always, it's just such a great gift to get that as an actor. It's so rare. Usually you're either playing a 2-hour story in a movie and maybe that spans over years, but you don't get that deep dive into a character's progression like that.
Is there a line that you delivered that you were especially proud of?
You know, it's so funny.
I'll tell you.
It sticks out of my mind. Such a fun scene.
You don't watch it every week.
Chappelle, right? With Chappelle.
Yes.
And,
I bet I know the line.
I think I do too. I love that line. Either fire me or get out of my chair.
Get out of my chair.
So, what's up, my friend?
It's like this. Either fire me or get out of my chair.
Yeah, either fire me or get the hell out of my chair.
That's a beautiful line.
It's very satisfying about that, right? And it's also something that I think as any human being would love to say to their boss.
Absolutely.
At any given moment, yeah.
Absolutely. Because he was so smug about, hey, what's next, my friend? What are we doing, my friend? And it was like the perfect answer. You know, it was the George Costanza line where you just drop the mic and walk away. And we're like, done. That's it. That's good.
Oh, my God. He was so much fun. He was so much fun to act with, too. But I remember Robert Cochran was the one that wrote that line. And he's the co-creator.
Yeah.
And one of the smartest human beings you will ever meet in your life. And along with Howard Gordon. Robert Cochran was like, came up to me smiling, going, "How do you like that fucking line?"
Hey, did you have multiple takes on that line, or did you just get it the first time?
I don't think that's a line that you really need more than one take.
Absolutely.
Amen.
You'd work 48 hours to get to that line. Absolutely. You know, it's interesting. I noticed this just in the last couple of weeks. The story of revenge by season seven. What's revealed at the end is that it's a revenge story. And I saw the parallel between you and Drazen, because Drazen used the revenge to use Jack to perform an execution. And by the end, you were doing the same thing. You had almost evolved into like a Victor Drazen type character of Jack, you're going to do my bidding and it's going to bring me satisfaction, which I thought was fascinating. Did you grow up watching TV? Was that part of your landscape?
Yeah, I grew up watching TV. I really remember early age watching a lot of like Looney Tune cartoons and mimicking characters, you know. And that's something I loved to do as a kid, was like mimic impressions of characters or actors or stuff like that. I love that. Yeah, I watched a lot of TV. I watched a lot of, like, the TV I watched was more interesting. I watched Hawaii Five-0 when I was a kid.
Oh, okay.
And I got to come back and act it and direct it.
Oh, that's full circle.
Oh, a funny story about that. I was actually, so when I was a kid, my family went to Hawaii on a trip. I was probably like 10 years old or so. And we go to Hawaii, and the original Hawaii Five-0 was on. And there was an actor, he was a football player, former football player named Al Harrington, who was like a recurring character on the original Hawaii Five-0.
Okay.
And we were at a restaurant in Hawaii, and my dad's like, hey, that's Al Harrington. So we went up and asked for his autograph and stuff and met him. And then flash forward, like God knows how many years, a few years ago, I was in Hawaii directing. And I was telling this story to Peter Lenkoff, who created the reboot. And I'm going, so, I got to meet Al Harrington. I was a huge fan of the original show. He goes, oh, wow, that's such a great story. Did you say hi to him yesterday? And I was like, what? He goes, yeah, he was the referee in the football game you directed. I'm like, what?
Are you kidding me?
What? I didn't know that. I didn't know.
Carlos, how did he not recognize you, though? Come on.
Oh, me? I was 10 years old. How did I not recognize him? But of course, he was an old man now.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah.
But he was literally in the scene as a referee. And funny enough, he kept holding his sides in his hand. There were like 40 people in the scene, so I didn't know everybody's name,
Right.
And I freaking directed him, and I didn't even get to say hi and say, I met you when I was 10. It was such a huge thrill. I completely missed that opportunity.
Well, you hinted before we started that there was a Chloe. I can't think of her real name. She's from Michigan. Why am I drawing a
blank? Oh, yeah, Marilyn.
Marilyn, yes. Sorry, there might be a Marilyn story. Marilyn story in here.
Yes, there is. It was literally a week ago. I'm flying back. So I dropped my wife and my son off in Miami so they could visit her parents while I was in shooting in New York, because they would have had to quarantine in New York. So
right.
So I went away to New York. I came back to Miami. I picked them up, and we're going to fly back to L.A. Well, I'm trying to find three seats together. We have to fly at night because he's 2.5. We need them to sleep.
Right.
Absolutely.
You want the red eye, right?
That's a long flight.
So I'm trying to find three seats together, and I could not find three seats together on any of the red eyes. And so I call the airline. They're like, well, you're going to have to ask somebody at the gate to switch. And it probably won't be a problem. Just ask somebody at the gate.
Right.
So we get to the gate early. We go up to the gate. We tell the guy our problem, that we're separated. And he's like, well, the best thing you can do is you just got to ask people if they'll switch with you. And they're like, well, there's a person right here. Let's ask them. The person between you, we'll ask if we can switch with you. He calls off, Mary Rykop. Mary Rykop? Mary Rice? And I look up, and here's Marilyn walking up with a hoodie on and glasses walking up, And I'm like, Marilyn?
It's a pandemic 24 reunion.
I'm like, what we're like, I can't believe this. We needed somebody to switch seats with us, and it's you.
That's amazing.
And she goes, oh my God, that's unbelievable. She goes, but I'm not gonna switch.
I knew it.
She's from Michigan. That's all I'll say. She's from Michigan. That's pretty hilarious. Did anybody else catch?
Coming back, she was shooting a movie in, I don't know where, some island down, coming through Miami to LA. And
did anybody else catch that?
Oh, I don't think anybody, no, because we were both like
laying low. That's great.
Mask.
That's amazing.
Mask and the whole thing. Yeah. Mask makes a big difference for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, that speaks to when people say, oh, that all the coincidences on 24, that's just not believable. Oh, yeah? Well, let me tell you this story about Carlos Bernard and Marilyn Rykop.
And again, hers has got to be a name that everybody messes up.
He butchered it three times, but it was like the different versions. I was like, that sounds like...
What are the chances? Was there anybody that had a really good sense of humor on the set?
No, nobody
had fun. Yeah, no.
Pretty much everybody, I mean, the question is, who didn't have a sense of humor? William Devane cracked me up.
Mainly because
William Devane was one of those guys who I grew up watching him.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it was like his version. He played Kennedy in some movie, right?
Yes, he did. Yep. And I remember that.
I know he did, because I used to do an impression of him. I used to do an impression of him. that whole thing he does with his
that is good.
Big teeth. And he'd be like, Bobby, what the hell's going on over here, right? That whole thing. So when I finally get to a scene with him.
Right.
And I have a scene where I'm walking through all this stuff. Like through the like CTU or whatever, it's a walk and talk through the whole place, and then I get into this conference room, and there's William Devane, and I have a scene with him. So I do the first part of the scene with this other actor. I'm walking through, I come up, and I land at William Devane, and he says his first line, and I just start laughing.
He's doing your impression. Well, you did say you watched Bugs Bunny and did impressions from Bugs Bunny. I mean. If Bugs Bunny walked on the set, you might have...
I'm not lying to you. I used to do a pretty good one. That one I did was just crap, but I used to do a good one. Anyhow, yeah. And so I go, sorry, let me do that again. So I go back, do the whole walk and talk, come through, land, he says his first line, and I start laughing again. It's like, hey, what the hell's going on? And I'm like, nothing. It's me. That's sorry. I used to do an impression of you, and you were doing exactly the same impression back at me. Because, all right, let's see it. And I'd be like, all right, let's see it. And he'd be like, wow. That doesn't sound like me.
Dude, doing the Devane for Devane. That's amazing. Oh, how much of a thrill was that?
I forgot about that story. That is, yes.
How much of a thrill was that for you? To work with some of the people you've watched for years.
Oh my God, totally him and so many. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Dennis Hopper,
Powers Booth. I mean, my goodness, so many people that I grew up watching would wind up on this series.
John Voight.
John Voight. Yeah.
John Voight was a blast to work with. I love working with John Voight.
And you'd worked a lot with John Voight.
Yeah. We had that season. Well, I'll tell you a John Voight story. We used to the first day I was going to work with John Voight, I'm sitting in the makeup chair, and all of a sudden, he comes walking up to me to introduce himself. He's like, hey. And I go, hey, John, how you doing? Nice to meet you. He goes, Tony Almeida. And he just kind of looks me up and down. And I was like, what's happening? He goes, I'm just sussing you out. He was already in character. It was hysterical. Oh, my God. I had a blast with him. He was so much fun.
That's incredible. So many legendary people came through the show, but so many legendary people came out of the show as well. I mean, that's why we get so excited when we see, for me, it's credibility. It's like there's so much TV out there. There's so many new shows. But if Howard Gordon's involved, I'm going to pay attention to that. If Carlos is directed, I'm probably going to watch that just to see if it's good. It's like a level of credibility for all of us that are so hooked on the show. And it's exciting to see Roger Cross and to see, you know, Leslie and other people doing so much. I mean, the universe has just expanded to so much of current TV and current movies and everything else. It's very exciting.
I couldn't agree more.
What has 24 meant for you, you know, in personally or in your career? What's kind of the lasting impression that you've been left with? We'll end with that today.
Well, it ruined it for me.
Ruined it? Yeah. Okay. Pray tell, please. How did it ruin it?
I mean, it's look. It was an experience that we all knew that we would never have again. We all knew it. We all knew this is a once in a lifetime experience.
Yeah.
So we treasured it. But what it did was it was my film school, really. You know, it taught me everything I want this work to be about. I mean, from the writers to the editors to the cameramen, the directors, everybody along the line was so talented and so, you know, were masters of their particular jobs. I would sit in and with editors and watch them work. I would, you know, spitball the writers like I told you. I would watch the directors. I mean, I just learned from everybody, you know. And I learned from my fellow actors too, the other actors that would come on.
Sure.
You know, it was the ultimate film school for me and basically raised the bar at a very high level where, to me, this is the way it should be done, you know? So when I walk onto a set now, whether it's as an actor or as a director, this is the way it should be done. Why are you not doing it this way? Or let's do it this way.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyhow, so it was, I can't really express how much it's meant to me. I'm still learning. Every time I direct, I still learn how much it meant to me.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
You know, someone once said, great works of art are never finished, only abandoned. So we never stop working on it. You know, we just run out of time.
Carlos, Aaron and I are so glad you took the time to hang with us tonight and share and celebrate with the 20 years of 24, and looking forward to the next 20 years of 24 and beyond, and everything else that you've got going on. But we'll keep up with what you're doing and continue to share it with the people that want to know. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
What's up, my friend?
It's like this. Either fire me or get out of my chair.